So all of the taxable events in a first-party S&T or D4A, they flow right on out to the beneficiary, right? Whether that's a sub-account, which is what I illustrate here, and that's in the first-party Arc of Texas, first-party Pooled Special Needs Trust, or whether that's a D4A or another self-settled trust. What's the advantage here? It's taxed at the beneficiary's personal tax rate, if there even is one. And this is important to remember because, you know, as you have capital gains, as you have income that comes into the trust, through any sort of investments or things like that, it all, regardless of distributions, okay, it all pushes out to that beneficiary's tax rate. And that's really beneficial for our beneficiaries with disabilities. I don't want to make sweeping overgeneralizations here, but the majority of people with disabilities with a first party special needs trust, let's say 60-70%, it may even be higher than that, don't have other gainful employment, meaning they don't have other income, they don't have rental income coming in, they don't have a job. You know, Stephen Haley, you know, talked a little bit about that and the right to work programs and things like that. And so when they're receiving SSI, which is generally not taxable, SSD, also generally half taxable, we'll say, and I'm overgeneralizing quite a bit here. You can see here the tax rates for 2022 are very, very low. Now, when you think about this as well, you can think about capital gains, how you have this, you have a $40,000 cap before anyone starts to get hit with the capital gains tax, and even then it's at 15%. The point here is that it's not a grantor trust, first party S&T is not taxed like a third party trust. You can see that as the bottom chart that I show you right there, which is the, these are simplified, but the 2022 tax rates were if the funds, and we'll talk about D&I here in a second, or distributable net income, if the funds are trapped or stay in the trust and are taxed at the trust levels, you can see there, just above $13,450 in income trapped within the trust, oh my gosh, you're starting to pay 37%, which is also the highest personal tax bracket, right? And so very, very advantageous, even though there's that payback provision typically in a first-party trust, very advantageous from a tax planning perspective. Steve, can you forward the slide? However, and you might be sitting here thinking, a lot of our tax planners, I'm sure, already went to this. Oh, awesome. In a grantor trust, I can also deduct all of my expenses for the grantor trust. And that used to be true. However, this was the elimination of miscellaneous itemized deductions was completely eliminated by the 2018 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act for grantor trusts. So you don't get that extra benefit of being able to deduct tax preparation fees, trustee fees, even if it's subject to that old floor, things like that, investment expenses, things like that. You're no longer able to deduct those. However, think again of our typical S&T beneficiary. Are they going to be itemizing deductions anyway, or are they most likely going to be taking the standard deduction? And the answer is the latter. So just be, aware, as you're talking to your clients about, itemized deductions and taxes, that no longer necessarily applies in general to first party trust, but also does it actually matter? And the answer is probably in most cases, no. Let's go ahead and switch slides and talk about third-party special needs trust. Now, again, recall that a third-party special needs trust is someone follow the money, right? So it's a trust established with funds of somebody other than the primary beneficiary. So the grantor is someone other than the beneficiary. And I'm going to be talking about complex trusts or qualified disability trusts, and I'll tell you a little bit about the distinction there. Here in a second. In these, when they're irrevocable for the complex trust tax treatment, their grantor cannot retain any interest, residual or otherwise. Now, Craig did a fantastic job of sort of explaining how you can set up a third party special needs trust and retain an interest when those, while living, or even, a residual interest should the beneficiary, the primary S&T beneficiary, predecease you or for other planning purposes. Typically, those trusts are going to be considered grantor trusts, right? And taxed as grantor trusts. There are certainly exceptions. This is a basic overview, and we're not going to get really too far into the weeds, although I think Trustee Weeks is doing a tax presentation at the main conference here coming up next week, so stay tuned for that. So to qualify as a complex trust, only one of these three things need to apply for the complex trust status. The trustee may accumulate income, right? Meaning that there is not a mandatory net income distribution provision within the trust, right? That would also be very, very, that would also complicate the beneficiary's eligibility for public benefits quite a bit as well, right? It would most likely put them over the $2,000 limit, or, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about in-kind support and maintenance and giving the beneficiary cash, all no-nos. So that's a pretty easy one, a pretty easy hurdle to clear. Trust may distribute corpus, right? Invasion of principal at the full discretion of the trustee. All good. And the trust may make distributions to charity. This one we typically don't see in a third party special needs trust, but these are the general rules for qualifying for a complex trust, third party, or qualified disability trust status. Now, thank you, Steve.